To halfway through the third canto. There are two big books in the third canto in the newer volumes. There are two big books in the third canto. There are two books in the fourth canto. Four in the tenth canto and two in the 11th canto. But the third canto probably has, and the fourth canto, out of all the cantos, has the most purports. Maybe the fourth canto has a few more, some more purports by Srila Prabhupada. The third canto so much deals with the creation and what happens at the beginning of the creation. Because this is Sarga, Atra Sarga Vishagastra Stanam Pushanam Daya. This is one of the topics, Sarga and Vishaga, the primary and secondary creation of the universe, is one of the topics that the Bhagavatam explains. And in the third canto, in the second canto, so much dealt with the creation of the universe and who is the creator of the universe. Because Lord Brahma is the secondary creator of the universe. And in this world we see so many secondary creators. What does it mean that someone is a secondary creator? It means that that which has already been created by Krishna, the ingredients are supplied, the intelligence, how to do it is supplied. But some person gets an inspiration from Krishna and puts things together and becomes a creator and very proud. Because there is a thrill in creation. It is actually a wonderful experience. That's why artists, they get that thrill of creation. But the difficulty about being an artist and being a creator is that you're dependent upon Krishna. This is the frustration of an artist, actually. Is you're dependent on Krishna. You don't know when the inspiration is going to come. There's such an anxiety in being an artist and a creator. Because you live for that thrill. But it's outside of your hands if it's going to come or not. Of course, one can mechanically play. But to actually create something, one is dependent upon Krishna, because he is the primary creator. He is the, in that Sanskrit verse, Atra Sagas, he is the Atra, he is the primary creator of everything. Everything exists in its seed form. And then some person gets a pinch of Krishna's creative potency, and he puts those elements together, and it's so thrilling. But actually the original creator is Krishna, and therefore one must be very, very humble. Humble means dependent. Acknowledging one's dependence. One who is dependent cannot be proud. So, in the third canto, there is so much description of the Atra Sarga. And Saga and Vishaga, the primary and secondary creation. Because we heard in the beginning of the canto there was a meeting between Uddhava and Vidura after Vidura had gone on pilgrimage. And it was a wonderful meeting, and Uddhava spoke about how Krishna had left and he was remembering Krishna. And then Vidura asked Uddhava about what Krishna had told him just before he left the planet. And then Uddhava, who was on his way to Bhadarikashram, he said, "You please go and ask Maitreya, who was nearby, who was up in Haridwar, because he is senior to me, and you are senior to me, so the proper etiquette should be followed." So Vidura went to Haridwar, 125 kilometers from where he met
Uddhava.
And he immediately began asking Maitreya questions. He asked him, not directly about Krishna, although his only interest was Krishna, but Vidura asked about the material energy and how this creation takes place. Because before we can understand the God in an intimate way, we have to understand how powerful He is. We have to get a glimpse of what it means, what God means. What is the concept of Ishvara, the Ishvara, God, the Lord? What does it actually mean? Otherwise, everyone can say, all the little secondary creators, someone folds a piece of paper, maybe, and he thinks, look what I have created, something wonderful. Someone builds a house. He thinks, I am a creator. But when we say that God is actually the creator, we mean something on a completely different level. And when we understand what God is, who God is, and what the potency, the power of God is, then we can understand our complete and absolute dependence upon Him. And when we understand our dependence on Him, then we can truly begin to worship Him. And that is really the beginning of spiritual life. The removal of the pride that we all have. And understand how dependent we are on Krishna. And that He is supplying everything for us. So when Maitreya, or rather Vidura, asked about the universe and its creation, he said, but please, I want to understand this, but I want to hear everything in relationship with Krishna. Because for a devotee, anything, whether it's seemingly for a materialist, the most wonderful thing, anything in the material world, without it being flavored by the sweetness of Krishna, it is dry like sand and ashes. That's what it's like to be a devotee. And for a devotee, if something, even the most miserable thing, has the flavor of Krishna, superficially the most miserable thing, then it is the most wonderful thing for a devotee. So for a devotee, all he cares about is remembering and being in the presence of Krishna. And therefore, in the verses that we'll read today, there's a reference to the sixth canto where Chitraketu Maharaj, when he's the king of the Vidyanagaras, or rather, Lord Shiva says about him, he says, Sagapavaganarakeshu Narayana Praksave Nakutaskanabibite Sagapavaganarakeshu Apituyatadash. That for a devotee, he doesn't care if he's in heaven or hell, liberated in the material world, they're all equal to him. Because for him, everything has a taste for Krishna, of Krishna, attached to it. Because his consciousness touches everything. Because that's what the symptom of his life is, his consciousness. So his consciousness is Krishna conscious. So he just sees Krishna everywhere. And therefore it doesn't make a difference to him where he is. Because everywhere he is with Krishna. And everywhere he is ecstatic for that reason. And therefore we see that when a devotee gets any benediction, when he's asked for a benediction, generally speaking, even though later on with Kardama Muni we're going to see how this rule is broken, but because a pastime has to be performed. But when a devotee gets any benediction, when the Lord is pleased with him or some great exalted person is pleased with him, and they say, what do you want? You could have anything. Just imagine what we would ask for if we could have anything. Ask for a new what? Car. At least in a car. What's the best kind of car around? Don't know. Anyway, two of them. One for each hand. One for each foot. Or something that we can feel secure and happy with. We want. We have so many things that we want, but when the devotee is asked, what do you want? He says, I just want to remember you.
just want to remember you, Krishna, my dear Lord. That let me take my birth anywhere. Anywhere. It doesn't make any difference to me. Let me be born as an insect even. An insect. What a horrible birth. But I want that. Even that, if it's in the house of a devotee, because being born in the house of a devotee means that there will always be the sound of Krishna's name, Bhaktivinoda Thakur praise. So, who can imagine this wonderful consciousness and the sweetness they're tasting in their own remembrance of Krishna, that nothing else is important to them? And no other so-called sweetness has any taste for them. So, therefore, Vidura said to Maitreya, please explain about the universe, Krishna's energies, but please explain your relationship to Krishna, who is the source of all the energies. So, Maitreya begins to explain from the very beginning of the universe, or before the universe, is that there was nothing except for the Lord. It's Karana Daksha Vishnu, and then gradually the Lord forms the rest of the material ingredients, and the creation moves onward, and false ego is created, etc., 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 etc. And then finally, chapters later, and months of the creation later, Lord Brahma is born. And then Lord Brahma doesn't know what to do. And then he depends on Krishna, he meditates, and he gets the potency by Krishna's mercy. He pleases Krishna by his devotion, and he gets the potency and knowledge to continue the creation further, which is called the Visarga, the secondary creation. That creation which is based on the primary creation, that which Krishna has already created. So, Brahma starts creating. Who remembers the first personalities that Brahma created? I'll give you a hint. If it's it's the four ums. The four Kumaras. The four Kumaras. And he asked them, please generate more creation. And they said, no. And he became angry, and Lord Shiva was born, and the seven great sages, and on the creation went. But it wasn't progressing fast enough, and then Swayambhuva Manu took his birth with his wife, Saptarupa. And they were destined to be the chief progenitors in some sense, and they were actually incarnations of the Lord. So, when Swayambhuva Manu said, okay, we are willing to extend the creation, but where should we do this? And then Lord Brahma saw that the earth had fallen down into the Garbhadak ocean. And therefore he had to, for the creation to continue, it had to be lifted up. And then Lord Varaha took his birth. And then after Lord Varaha dove down and picked up the earth, and then a demon whose name was Haranyaksha, attacked him. So, hearing that, and how the Lord killed Haranyaksha, hearing that from Maitreya, Vidura asked him, what was the cause of the enmity between this person, Haranyaksha, and the Lord? Why did he just attack him? There were so many other created beings, and they didn't attack the Lord, nor did they have the power to attack the Lord, but they didn't attack him. Why immediately, for no reason, no cause, did he attack? What was the cause of the enmity, that feeling of hatred that this Haranyaksha had in his heart about the Lord? Because after all, he is the reservoir of all love for the living entity. And why is this living entity hate the Lord so much? So, So Maitreya continues to tell the story, the pastime, and that was the last verse we read before our vacation, in between the different semesters, of how the powerful personality, Kardama Muni, how he impregnated his wife at an inauspicious time. Due to Diti, his wife's pushing, he impregnated her at an inauspicious time. And since he himself was so powerful, and since the time was so inauspicious, bad, a very, very powerful, but very demonic person was born. And then Kodama Muni, when Aditi felt bad about this, Kodama Muni told her what was going to happen, that you were carrying within your womb these two personalities, two twins who were meant to give trouble to everyone, horrible personalities. Huh? Kasyapa, excuse me. Kasyapa. And actually it would be interesting because there it's Kasyapa Muni and they have a very inauspicious conception of a child with Diti. And then we'll hear in a few chapters about Kodama Muni's conception of a child, and very much depends on the mood of the wife. And you will contrast the results at that particular time. The mood, and will contrast the results. Kasyapa Muni, thank you. So now we're up to, but there was a benediction that Kasyapa gave his wife, Diti, because she was thrilled when she heard that her demons, demonic children were going to be so fortunate they would be killed by the Lord, because that brings great results. Everything the Lord does brings great results. So she was so faithful about that that he blessed her also that the grandchild of her grandchild would be a great devotee. And that grandchild we will hear about in the seventh canto. And his name is Prahlad Maharaj. Prahlad Maharaj's devotion is so wonderful. When Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu would hear about Prahlad Maharaj, he would cry. So it'll be very exciting when we up to that part of the Bhagavatam. So now chapter 15. So Maitreya is continuing to tell what was the cause of the enmity, and how did the pastime develop? And he's going to go. So he explained one thing already, the cause of these children, these two, this Hiranyaksha, was so inimical to the Lord, and he had taken his birth from Kasyapa and Diti, and that's been already hinted at. But now we're going to go back even further to what kind of a soul takes his birth so powerful, but yet so inimical to the Lord. So here there's a prelude to that. Sri Maitreya said, Maitreya Vacha, my dear Vidura, Diti, the wife of the sage Kasyapa, could understand that the sons within her womb would be a cause of disturbance to the demigods. As such, she continuously bore the powerful semen of Kasyapa Muni, which was meant to give trouble to others, for 100 years. So she would not give birth because she didn't want a child to come out who would give trouble to so many living entities. By the force of the pregnancy of Diti, the light of the sun and moon was impaired in all the planets. All the demigods of various planets, being disturbed by that force, asked the creator of the universe, Brahma, what is the expansion of darkness in all directions? So although she kept the children within her womb, still they were so powerful. By their potency, they caused a great darkness, a dimming of the sun and the moon throughout the universe. And the demigods, not knowing what the cause of this is, they went to Lord Brahma, who is the chief demigod. As we have described, he is born directly from the Lord himself, and he's so powerful, and they begin to glorify him, and they want to know what the problem is and how to solve it. So the demigods went to Lord Brahma, And they said, oh, great one, just see this darkness, which you know very well, because you also see it, and which is causing us anxiety. It's natural. If in the daylight, suddenly everything becomes very dark. What happens? First of all, bad elements start coming out. Second of all, no one can do their duties. No one can do their work. Third, no one knows what's going to happen next. So if you can't do what you're supposed to do, and bad elements are coming out, and you don't know what's going to happen next, what will you feel? What will you experience? Fear. So the demigods, feeling great fear, went to approach Lord Brahma. They said, you know everything. Because of the influence of time cannot touch you, there is nothing unmanifest before you, because Brahma is so exalted. O God amongst the demigods, sustainer of the universe, head jewel of all the demigods and other planets, you know the intentions of all living entities in both the material and spiritual worlds. Brahma is so powerful. Because Lord Brahma is empowered by Krishna. He's actually an avatar, the guna avatar. That means that he carries the potency of Krishna meant for the creation of this world, the mode of passion. And therefore, being such an empowered personality, even though he is an individual soul, like we are individual souls, he is a jiva generally, a soul like we are, but yet he's carrying, due to his purity and piety and his desire to serve Krishna, Krishna empowers him to do a specific work in this world. So the demigods are glorifying him. But in glorifying him, they're actually glorifying Krishna. Because Krishna is the source of Brahma's power. So they say, Brahma, O original source of strength and scientific knowledge, all obeisances unto you. You have accepted the differentiated mode of passion from the Supreme Personality of Godhead. With the help of the external energy, you are born of the unmanifested source. You are born from the Lord, Garudaksha Vishnu. All obeisances unto you. O Lord, all these planets exist within yourself. And all the living entities are generated from you. Therefore, you are the cause of this universe, and anyone who meditates on you, without deviation, attains devotional service. Because if one meditates on Brahma properly, one will understand that Brahma, where does Brahma get his power from? So a meditation on Brahma, if it is done fully, will lead to a meditation on Krishna. And then meditation on Krishna will lead to service to Krishna, because Krishna is so attractive, and that service is called devotional service. There is no defeat in the material world for persons who control the mind and senses by controlling the breathing process, and who are therefore experienced mature mystics. This is because by such perfection in yoga they have attained your mercy, O Prabhupada. Explains in the purport the invincibility of a devotee. The purpose of yogic performances is explained here. It is said that an experienced mystic attains full control of the senses and the mind by controlling the breathing process, because when people think of yoga, they usually think of just the asanas, the different physical postures that one practices. But after that stage of yoga, which is the third stage of yoga, is the fourth stage of pranayama, or the breathing processes, where one learns to control the breathing very carefully. And of course that makes the body very healthy, and it makes the mind function properly, in a healthy way. But the purpose of that type of pranayama is control of the mind, because breath and mind are intimately connected. It's like if someone's very upset, often Someone else will tell him, just go somewhere and just breathe, take a deep breath. Because that helps you collect yourself, because breath and mind, again, are connected. So you breathe in and out a few times, and that makes the mind more peaceful. And then, in the yogic process, when one can control his breath and then can control one's mind, then one withdraws it from the sense objects. So the purpose of yoga is to control the mind, to withdraw it and from the objects of the senses, and then place it carefully at the lotus feet of Krishna. That is the perfection of yoga. So Prabhupada explains, controlling the breathing process is not the ultimate goal of yoga. The real purpose of yogic performance is to control the mind and the senses. Anyone who has control, has such control, is to be understood to be an experienced, mature, mystic yogi. It is indicated herein that a yogi who has control over the mind and senses has the actual benediction of the Lord, and he has no fear. In other words, one cannot attain the mercy and benediction of the Supreme Lord until one is able to control the mind and the senses. Because as long as the mind is rushing here and there, and the senses are so attracted to the sense object, and so attracted to that sense, and making their demands upon the mind, and when the mind is not under control, it forces the person to run here and there trying to enjoy, and the mind is so disturbed due to the uncontrolled mind and senses, then one cannot perform the activities, have the sincerity of purpose and prayer to evoke the mercy of Krishna. So therefore, although Krishna's mercy, when we look at it from a slightly different side, is causeless and it is independent. Bhakti is svatantra. It is independent. It's not dependent. It's not that if I control my mind and senses, therefore mechanically Krishna is going to give me mercy. No. He is independent in giving his mercy. Yet, unless we are sincerely trying to serve him, with vyavyasatvika buddhi, with focused attention, then he is not inclined to be causelessly merciful upon us. Because we have, and why should he? We have so many other desires, but as soon as we are focused in our desire to love and serve Krishna, and we've withdrawn our mind and senses from all other things, because the senses and the sense objects, they are paripantana. They are stumbling blocks on the path of Krishna consciousness. So until we withdraw our mind and senses from those things, then we will stumble. So we all have that experience, at least I do. The stumbling caused by the attachment of me to the enjoying. So when we focus our consciousness fully on Krishna, then we are liable to get Krishna's mercy, because Krishna will reciprocate. Just like if I have one thing, if a child has one thing on his mind, I want to go outside. And he says to his mother, I want to go outside, 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 I want to go outside. Then the mother will say, oh, take him aside. But if the child says, I want to go outside, I want to eat something, I want to play now, I want to watch something, I want to talk on the telephone, I want to go, I want to touch that, I want to go to sleep. If we present so many different desires, then the mother will not reciprocate and take her outside. So when we are one pointed in our desire, and that's all it takes, this one pointedness in desire, then Krishna will reciprocate in that way. But our problem is bahushaka tantascha. Yeah, bahushaka, many branched, you know, our desires. So we get many branched reciprocation from Krishna. So a person who has controlled his mind and senses has the actual benediction of the Lord, and he has no fear because he is so close to Krishna, because that is his desire. And that door is open to each and every one of us. It is very simple, although we can say it is not easy, but it is simple. Not easy to just focus our minds on Krishna. Usually we have to get hit very hard until the whole world seems very empty and vacant and there's nothing, nowhere else for us to go, and then we'll take shelter of Krishna. As long as we feel we have alternatives, we will generally take those alternatives, because that's, we're in the material world and we have that type of consciousness. But gradually or quickly, by the strength of intelligence or the good fortune comes from Bhagavatam, we should really move towards being focused on Krishna and nothing else. That is intelligence. So in other words, one cannot attain the mercy and benediction of the Supreme Lord until one is able to control the mind and the senses. This is actually possible. One can actually control one's mind and senses when one is fully engages in Krishna consciousness. A person whose senses and mind are always engaged in the transcendental service of the Lord has no possibility of engaging in material activities. So these two things should be always engaged in Krishna service. The senses and the mind. And what do we tend to do? We tend to engage our senses in Krishna service. But our mind, we just like, we unravel it and let it just go wherever it wants. And then what happens? The senses will follow the mind. But if the mind is focused upon Krishna and the senses are engaged in service to Krishna, then our progress will be very, very fast. But the key, Savai Krishna Pada Paravindeva, Mana Paravindeva. First of all, Manmana, engage your mind in thinking about me. Therefore we should chant Hare Krishna and chant Hare Krishna and purify the mind. And hear about Krishna and become attracted to Krishna, because there is no difficulty in focusing the mind upon things we are attracted to. If we are spontaneously, naturally attracted to something, we don't have to focus, we don't have to struggle, to strain to focus our mind upon it. So if we can hear about Krishna and somehow gain an attraction for Krishna and his pastimes and his sweet personality and his mercy by hearing the Bhagavatam, hearing how he deals with the devotees, and we're moving in this chapter towards the end of this chapter, in the next chapter we're going to get one of our first glimpses of Krishna. We're going to visit the spiritual world and see how sweet it is there and compare that to the material world. We've been hearing about the material world and how it is crushed by time continuously, how there is so much discordance, how everything that we try to do is doomed to failure, and yet we keep on trying. And in this chapter we're going to begin a visit to the spiritual world, to Vaikuntha. Vaikuntha means where there is no, the place where there is no what? Anxiety. And in the material world, it is a place where there's continuous anxiety. Why by definition is there anxiety in the material world? Huh? Yep. There's the big four right there.
Why do we want something eternal? And what's the problem with having something temporary? Yeah. But what does it really mean when you have something and you're going to lose it? Just by definition, whatever it is, huh? Yeah, just when you have something and you want it, and you know you're going to lose it, that's a formula for anxiety and misery. And on the other hand, if you have something that you know you will never lose, then you can become peaceful. That's why even in Kali Yuga, even on the material level, when this is one of the horrible things about this age in which we live, is this divorce thing. That the man and the woman, and now the children, they're always in anxiety because you never know when your partner is going to leave you. So much anxiety. So when they promise at the they probably don't even do that anymore, but they used to promise, "I promise to serve you." How does it go? Good times and bad, and sickness and health. To death do us part. And nowadays, like, I can't imagine people saying that. Oh, come on, that's really asking a lot, isn't it? To death do us part? Good times and bad? Whether I like you or like somebody more or not? Whether you bother me? Whether you don't provide my sense, in fact? I'm going to leave. That's too much. I bet they must have a civil ceremony where you don't have to say anything like that. Where you just say, do you accept this person as your partner, at least for the time being? Something like that. Until convenience, do you part? Something like that. In good times, at least. Until bad times come along. Could you please accept them until bad times come? At least that? I do. That's a relief, isn't it? But that's what people are in, so much anxiety. Just even the marriage, institution of marriage, causes falling apart, causes so much anxiety in the children. So, therefore, because things are temporary, the having a thing causes anxiety, and not having it causes anxiety. So we're going to visit the land of the eternal, beginning with our eternal relationship with Krishna, later in this chapter. So, a person whose senses and mind are always engaged in the transcendental service of the Lord has no possibility of engaging in material activities. The devotees of the Lord are not defeated anywhere in the universe. It is stated, Narayana Praksave, one who is Narayana Para, or a devotee of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is not afraid anywhere, whether he is sent to hell or promoted to heaven. What is the cause of his lack of anxiety? What is the cause of his fearlessness? If you have something, the only thing in existence that you actually truly value, and that is for the Narayana Parak, Narayana Para, for the devotee of the Lord, he has his relationship with Krishna is everything to him. And he's completely secure in that. And it gives him so much pleasure. And it's eternal, and he can never lose it. And he's experiencing constantly the sweetness of it. Then what is the difference where he is superficially, externally? So he's fearless, because he's assured always of his relationship with Krishna, which means also the protection of Krishna everywhere. But it's not just like a promise. He's experiencing always that relationship. Why? Because his mind and senses are always engaged in the transcendental loving service of the Lord. And in that service, he's experiencing Krishna. So it's not a matter of faith, where he believes that he is, and then he dies and goes to heaven. It's not like that.
It's that he's experiencing continuously Krishna due to his constant engagement in devotional service. So we say those terms so often and so easily. He's constantly engaged in devotional service. We say it so much that we don't even think of what it means. But it means that such a person, and it sounds so easy, he's fully, his mind and senses are fully engaged in Krishna consciousness. So we say that. And sometimes we think, yeah, I'm always engaged. But actually, talking about a different level. That level of engaging the mind and the senses oneself in Krishna service with bhakti and Krishna consciousness. Krishna bhakti rasa bhavito mati. Tasting the sweetness of our relationship with Krishna through serving him, chanting his names, manmanab bhava mad bhakto, becoming Krishna's devotee. That we are experiencing Krishna. So then, what is a bad situation for a person who has Krishna? There's no bad situation. And for a person who doesn't have Krishna in that way, practically speaking, there's no good situation. Or a good situation is one where he's developing that good situation. That is actually reality. That is what the world looks like, looking at it above from the absolute position, judging what's going on. That the person who doesn't have Krishna has nothing. Viewed from the point of eternity, even if he appears to have something, he has nothing. And on the other hand, a person who has Krishna, viewed from the point of eternity, even though he just may have started, he's so fortunate. He's walking to the door out. So the demigods, they are afraid. So they're going to Brahma and praising him and asking for his help. All the living entities within the universe are conducted by the Vedic directions, as a bull is directed by the rope attached to its nose. No one can violate the rules laid down in the Vedic literatures. To the chief person who has contributed the Vedas, we offer our respects. So the Vedas teach how to live in the material world so that one can enjoy it, yet transcend the material world. And Brahma, the Vedas come from Brahma, so the demigods are glorifying Brahma. So the demigods prayed to Brahma and said, "Please look upon us mercifully, for we have fallen into a miserable condition." Why? "Because of the darkness, all of our work has been suspended. As fuel overloads a fire, so the embryo created by the semen of Kashyapa in the womb of Diti has created complete darkness throughout the universe." So they understood what the cause was, but they wanted Brahma to remedy the situation. Thus Lord Brahma, who is understood by transcendental vibration, tried to satisfy the demigods, being pleased with their words of prayers. Now Lord Brahma is going to explain. So the demigods already knew the cause of the darkness being these two personalities within Diti's womb, but they wanted to know more. What? Because if these living entities are so powerful, even before they're born, they're causing this sort of trouble, what's going to happen after they're born? And what kind of living entities are these that have such a mood that even before their birth they're disrupting everything? Who are they? So now, Brahma's going to tell the story of going back a step. The darkness is caused by these two, and who is causing what? How did these two get in that position? Let's hear. So he says, "My four sons, the first four sons, Sanaka, Sanatan, Sananda, and Sanatkumara, who were born from my mind, are your predecessors. They were born before the demigods. Sometimes they travel throughout the material and spiritual skies without any definite desire. So here is the beginning of the story of these two within the womb who are causing so much trouble and are so powerful. After traveling all over the universes, they also entered into the spiritual sky. For they were free from all material contamination. So what do we immediately learn from that? If one wants to enter the spiritual sky, one has to be free from material contamination. And what is material contamination? Material desire. Anything material. Anything material is a contamination on the soul, the pure soul. The soul is spiritual, it is eternal. And if he's spotted and speckled with the dirt of material contamination, he cannot go there, he cannot enter, he does not qualify. So there, they were able to go anywhere they wanted because of their purity. In the spiritual sky, there are spiritual planets known as Vaikunthas. Again, as you heard, Vaikuntha means the places where there are no anxiety. There are the spiritual planets known as of Godhead. And his pure devotees and are worshipped by the resonance of all material planets. So these spiritual planets, which we're going to hear about, they are above and worshipable, superior to any planet, any situation in the material world. So it is better than anything that we that's in the material world. It is the best place. And we'll hear about it. Now, here's Prabhupada's purport. The material world is full of cares and anxieties. In any one of the planets, beginning from the highest down to the lowest patala, every living creature must be full of cares and anxieties. Because in the material world, one cannot live eternally. The living entities, however, are actually eternal. They want an eternal home, an eternal residence. But because of accepting a temporary abode in the material world, they are naturally full of anxiety. In the spiritual sky, the planets are called Vaikuntha because the residents of these planets are free from all anxiety. For them, there is no question of birth, death, old age, and disease. And therefore, they are not very anxious. They are not anxious. On the other hand, the residents of the material planet are always afraid of birth, death, disease, and old age, and therefore they are full of anxieties. More descriptions. So the first description of the spiritual planets, they are Vaikuntha. They have actual places, and there is no anxiety there, because they are eternal, and all the persons who go there, free from material contamination, are also eternal. And they live there eternally with no birth, no death, no old age, no disease, no taxes, no mosquitoes, flies. What else? Isn't there? Huh? Yeah, excessive heat and cold. No television. No television. That story, did you ever hear that story up from my talk? I think it must be in England, that these Christian missionaries were preaching to some miners. And they said, if you don't worship Jesus Christ, you're going to go to hell. First, when they preach, they have to make everyone a little afraid. If you don't worship Jesus Christ, you're going to go to hell. And they said, well, what's hell like? It's completely dark. There's no light. I hope I explained. But that didn't mean anything to them because they worked deep in the mines. So they weren't afraid. So the missionaries had to think from another angle. And they said, hell is very, very dangerous. Why? Because there are no newspapers there. And they went, oh, horrible. A world without newspapers. So different people have their different attachments in that way. So there's no television, but there's only transcendental television in the spiritual world. There's no influence, negative influence of time. Someone asked Prabhupada once if there was snow in the spiritual world. I can't remember where. This is an older one I heard. He said, yes, but it is not cold. Everything is wonderful. So in the Vaikuntha planets, all the residents are similar in form to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Everyone is beautiful, possesses an eternal body that's beautiful, similar in form to the Lord Himself. They all engage in devotional service to the Lord without desires for sense gratification. So we'll see that they enjoy so much, there's so much opulence, there's the absence of misery, but yet they have no desire to enjoy. They have no desire to attain opulences. They have no desire to remove misery. And yet they get all that because of their one desire, which is pure. And that one desire is to serve Krishna. Even though they're surrounded by so many wonderful things, they don't desire to enjoy. They desire to serve Krishna. And that is the key. Prabhupada explains in the purport. In Vaikuntha Loka, there is no occupation but the service of the Lord. In Vaikuntha Loka, but the service of the Lord, and this service is not rendered with a purpose. In other words, when in this material world, when we serve someone, it is to get something. But in the spiritual world, there is no purpose, ulterior motive behind the service. It is just to please Krishna. Although every service has a particular result, the devotees never aspire for the fulfillment of their own desires. Their desires are fulfilled by rendering transcendental loving service to the Lord. Even though they get everything, they don't want anything except to please Krishna. This is wonderful. In the Vaikuntha planets is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So the first verse describing Vaikuntha, we heard something of the planets. Then the personalities there, what they're doing. They're eternal, they look like the Lord, and they have only one desire to please the Lord, even though they're surrounded by opulence. And now the essence of it is the Lord Himself is there. In the Vaikuntha planets is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is the original person, and who can be understood through the Vedic literatures. Prabhupada, there are three statements in this verse. We'll hear them one by one. And Prabhupada, in the purport, explains them one by one. In the Vaikuntha planets, here's the first. I'll read the whole thing, the whole verse, and see if you can pick out the three statements. And then I'll ask you what they are, and what the essence of each one is. In the Vaikuntha planets is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is the original person and who can be understood through the Vedic literatures. He is full of the uncontaminated mode of goodness. Sattvam. With no place for passion or ignorance. He contributes religious principles for the devotees. So the first one, what's the first statement mean? It's hard when you don't have a book to look at, isn't it? That the Lord is there, but no one can know Him or understand Him on their own, by their own power. Only he can be understood through the Vedic literatures. Revealed knowledge. Descending knowledge. Second statement, I'll make it easier, I'll read it. He is full of uncontaminated goodness with no place of passion ignorance. So the existence there has nothing to do with the existence of the material world. It is pure. No three modes of material nature. Everything is perfect in Siddhasattva, pure goodness. So it's a different type of existence. And third, he contributes religious progress for the devotee, and Prabhupada explains that one right at the end of the purport in a very simple and sweet way. The Vaikuntha planets are very dear to the Vaishnavas. And for the progressive march of the Vaishnavas towards the kingdom of God, the Lord himself helps his devotees. So that is the Lord's contribution, special contribution. He helps the devotees get closer to him. He gives the devotees everything required to advance to him. In those Vaikuntha planets, there are many forests, so there's no formlessness. It's not that when we leave this world, everything becomes one and we become one with everything. Listen, in those Vaikuntha planets, there are many forests which are very auspicious. In those forests, the trees are desire trees, and in all seasons they are filled with flowers and fruits, because everything in the Vaikuntha planets is spiritual and personal, not formless. In the Vaikuntha planets, the inhabitants fly in their airplanes, accompanied by their wives and consorts, and eternally sing of the character and activities of the Lord, which are always devoid of all inauspicious qualities. While singing the glories of the Lord, they deride even the presence of the blossoming Madhavi flowers, which are fragrant and laden with honey. In other words, everything is very, very sweet and wonderful. And everyone's consciousness is focused on pleasing Krishna. There are so many opulent things around. There are beautiful, beautiful men and beautiful, beautiful women and beautiful singing and beautiful, sweet, honey-laden breezes, fragrant airplanes, Biman flower made out of flowers. But yet, no one is interested in just enjoying these things. So we can just imagine how sweet what they are tasting is the service of Krishna. But these things have no interest, primary interest. When the king of bees hums in a high pitch, singing the glories of the Lord, there is a temporary lull in the noise of the pigeons, the cuckoos, the cranes, the chakravarta, the swans, the parrots, the partridges, and the peacocks. Such transcendental birds stop their own singing simply to hear the glories of the Lord. So there's a few points in this. One is, if you've lived in Vrindavan, or been to Vrindavan, that one of the special things about Vrindavan is that there are so many birds. And there's always the sound of so many birds, and the atmosphere is made so wonderful. Of course, it has its own special transcendental sweetness, but it's wonderful because all the birds are there. And it just changes the atmosphere. But nowhere else that I've ever seen are there many birds, and you get used to it. But the birds help the atmosphere. So nice. So this is one of the wonderful atmospheric conditions of Vaikuntha, that there are always so many wonderful birds, the cuckoos and cranes and swans and pigeons. And they're all making their chirping sounds. But when the glories of the Lord are being sung, they all stop to be able to hear. This also means that there is no envy in their hearts because they're spiritual.
And then the last verse we'll read. What's on the sheet? It says up to 19. Although the flowering plants like the Mandara, Kunda, Kura, Bakka, Utpal, I don't know what any of those are almost, Champaka, that's a wonderful flower, Arna, Purnaga, Nagakesha, Bakul, Lily, and Parijata, they're full of, these are all wonderful flowers, very, very different fragrances. Several of those are in Vrindavan. They're full of transcendental fragrance. They are still conscious of the austerities performed by Tulsi. For Tulsi is given special preference by the Lord, who garlands himself with Tulsi leaves. So the Tulsi, even though those flowers are so wonderful, the Tulsi flower is still more wonderful. Why? Because the Lord has special affection and attraction for Tulsi. Now, remember this. Because later on in the chapter, we will hear something wonderful that Tulsi does. I'll just read the purport and we'll stop. The importance of Tulsi leaves is very clearly mentioned here. Tulsi plants and their leaves are very important in devotional service. Devotees are recommended to water the Tulsi tree every day and collect the leaves to worship the Lord. One time, an atheistic Swami remarked, "What is the use of watering the Tulsi plant? It is better to water eggplant. By watering the eggplant, one can get some fruits. But what is the use of watering the Tulsi?" These foolish creatures, unacquainted with devotional service, sometimes play havoc with the education of people in general. The most important thing about the spiritual world is that there is no envy amongst the devotees there. This is true even amongst the flowers, which are all conscious of the greatness of Tulsi. In the Vaikuntha world, entered by the four Kumaras, even the birds and flowers are conscious of service to the Lord. Very wonderful. So we should hear about Vaikuntha. We should not be satisfied living in the miserable material world. And we should want, the desire should come to us to go there. We should want to go back to Godhead. We should want this very much. We should want to be with Krishna, serving Krishna eternally in the spiritual world with full love. But, like the Kumaras, we have to be free of material contamination. So the more that desire comes to our heart, the more impetus there is to remove the material contamination, and especially not to add any more. Okay, thank you very much. Okay, only question, no questions left. Thank you, just wait. Okay.
In the third text, it says that time cannot touch Brahma. And I got a bit confused.
Don't get really confused.
I thought Brahma is 100 years. 100 years.
But don't get really confused. Just, you can understand it, you may not understand it, but don't get confused. But then what happens after his 100 years are over? And then what does he do? He goes back to Godhead. That's generally how it's described. They get news of all this and go back to Godhead. That he's going to die because the whole universe is finished. So therefore, life, death. If one knows that he's a soul, time doesn't touch him, even though he may be in a material body. One can look at him that way. I don't know if the demigods exactly meant. Yeah, he says the influence of time. He knows everything. because of time, we don't know, we forget what happened in the past, we don't know what happened, we don't know what's going to happen in the future. But because Brahma is an incarnation, he can see everything. So the effect of time, this is specifically what it means here, the effect of time in limiting his knowledge isn't present because Krishna empowers him to know. That's how Prabhupada explains it in the purport. And that service to the Lord has to be without getting anything from out for ourselves. It has to be unmotivated. Because we could want to serve the Lord, and by wanting to serve the Lord, we want to gain something for ourselves, some material benefit. So it has to be jnana karma anavrita. And then it's true. There's a definition of exactly what the pure devotional service is by Rupa Goswami in Bhakti Samhita Sindhu. You know that verse? Anya Vilasita Sanyam, do you know that verse? Why? Oh. I once said that to Prabhupada too, something like that. And you know what his answer was? Yes, but you should not remain a rascal. So you should learn the verse. You have to find out. Who knows that verse? Raise your hand if you know that verse. Can you show her where it is? It's also written in Chaitanya Charitamrita in Sanskrit. So many places, it must be in the purpose. You have to learn it. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jaya. So tomorrow we continue about Vaikuntha. And then we'll find out.